Good morning and welcome to Mid Morning. I'm Lynn Ford. Down to earth, seminary educated with a proven business track record, and most importantly, a child of God committed to knowing Him and helping others do the same. Mitch Cruz joins us the third Tuesday of every month. Mitch is the author of Restoration Road and the host of the TV show of the same name. Go to MitchCruz.com for the complete list of stations airing his show and for more information about his ministry. Here at WBCL, it's your giving that enables us to be there for you, and a special thanks to the Millhouse Bed and Breakfast, located on the banks of the Maumee River in Grand Rapids, Ohio. That's how you have to say that. Find out more about our supporters on the Ministry Partners page at WBCL.org. If our skin was transparent, we'd probably be more physically active and nosh on a few more vegetables because we could actually see how our lifestyle was affecting our organs. And if we could actually see into our souls, we'd be faced with the truth about ourselves. Is who we say we are, think we are, our actions, an exact reflection of our soul's true condition? Today's Mid-Morning with Mitch Cruz will help you answer the question. Mitch is going to lead us further into Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, which wasn't solely a great speech. God was speaking then and now about being a child of God, a relationship that encompasses all of life. You can download today's worksheet from the Mid-Morning homepage. Go to WBCL.org, click on Programs, and then Mid-Morning. Welcome back, Mitch.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good to be here. I saw you and Becca acting out while I was doing the beginning stuff.
Well, we just have a little fun. I wondered who you were talking about at the beginning. That's why I started laughing.
Who's this guy?
Yeah.
Who else is joining us?
Yes, exactly. That actually went through my mind. I started laughing.
A surprise guest. It's you.
It's me.
Well, we are talking about Inside Out Righteousness. This is the series that you started. Six parts, I think. We had first part last month. Mm-hmm. What does that exactly mean?
Well, Jesus was speaking to probably 20,000 people on the mountainside, and the Pharisees were and the teachers of the law were these religious guys that people thought highly of. But they had put 1,500 rules and regulations and stipulations around the 613 Old Testament laws with a desire or a heart to protect the law, mm-hmm. a hedge to protect it.
To make sure they were doing it right, keeping the law.
Right. And it ended up in outside-in righteousness, that they wanted to justify themselves. It became religion rather than a relationship. And Jesus takes us back to the ultimate clarity of the law, the spirit of the law. And you fast forward 2,000 years today, and look, I mean, it's the same issue. Anybody who takes his or her faith seriously is going to risk outside-in righteousness. We want to justify ourselves. We want God to grade on the curve, so to speak. So Jesus goes into the next two, and the next one is to be divorce-free. And it's really such a hot topic, so to speak, in our world. Michael Medved wrote a book about this, and he studied the statistics in every courthouse in the United States. This is probably a decade or so ago. And he wanted to dispel the myth that that's kind of run awry of 50% of marriages fail. Well, that's true, but there's a little bit more to it. What he found was that 75%, and it's a little bit lower now, but 75% a decade ago of children live with both biological parents. So he thought, well, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. One in every two marriages fails, but three-fourths of the kid live with their biological parents. And what it is it's the same group of people getting married and divorced, married and divorced, married and divorced. So for example, or I know somebody very well that could walk in this room and all of a sudden the marriage rate would be 50% because that person's been divorced at least twice. Does that mm-hmm. make sense with
Does.
You and me in the room? So it's when I ask this question, you're probably going to be able to raise your hand. Whether you're driving, be careful. But have you or anyone in your immediate family been divorced? Divorce means to go separate ways. A couple cannot divorce unless they've first been married. And God designed marriage for man to leave, cleave, and weave. To leave his family, cleave to his wife, and weave his life with hers. Consequently, God hates divorce. The Bible tells us that. In spite of the Bible's clarity on the issue, the divorce rate is higher among the church than the unchurched. So just sharing this with someone last night. That's amazing. That is amazing. And that just brings us back to this whole idea 2,000 years ago. What Jesus was talking about is so true today. So in his third of six examples of inside-out righteousness, Jesus taught his disciples to be divorce-free. And as we discussed last month, in each example, Jesus followed a threefold pattern. He addressed the Old Testament command saying, "You've heard that it was said." He alluded to the Pharisees' legalistic interpretation. And then third, he clarified the intent or the spirit of the law, prefacing its fulfillment with, "But I tell you." So we're going to have the Old Testament command, the legalistic interpretation, and then the spirit of the law.
Before you get to that, Mitch, can you say a little bit about the culture to which Jesus was speaking? Because last night I was reading through a commentary about this and I learned a few things that I hadn't really thought much about before. And it took a look at the Greek culture, the Roman culture, and then the Jewish culture, and why what he was saying was so dramatic and so unusual in light of how these three cultures, which had sort of come together in Palestine, his statements about divorce were shocking to them, because in the Greek culture, wives were basically for bearing children, and that it was expected that men would have multiple affairs. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was just the way it was set up. Mm-hmm. Marriage was for having children. Men could have as many affairs as they wanted. You know, if you didn't do that, there was something wrong with you. Mm-hmm. The Romans held marriage in high esteem, but as the Greek culture seeped into them, their own standards for marriage dropped as well. Mm-hmm. The Jewish culture was one that really respected marriage, but it had also been tainted by just the selfishness of man, mm-hmm. wanting what he wanted. And so when Jesus steps in and makes these statements about divorce, these were three cultures who were very accepting of divorce and had thought pretty little of women. You know, women were basically possessions to be taken, to be owned. And one of the statements that Barclay made was that even women in this day, Jewish women, there was a hesitancy to become married because they could be so easily abandoned. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't want marriage for that reason.
Yeah, exactly.
So here comes Jesus.
Yeah. And so Jesus says, in that, that's beautiful background. So Jesus says, in that culture, it has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. And so he's referencing Moses' law that said, if a man marries a woman who becomes displeasing to him because he finds something indecent about her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, gives it to her and sends her from his house. That's Deuteronomy 24:1. Mm-hmm. And we got to keep in mind that this is taking 2.5 million people from slavery to be free, okay? And so how one defined indecent, something indecent about her, was the hinge point in the interpretation and application of the verse, mm-hmm. okay? So that's the Jewish background, and you've talked about the Roman and the Greek background. And so the legalistic interpretation of that would be a husband who gives his wife a certificate of divorce has no obligation to her. I mean, just let those words sink in a minute, okay? Because it sounds really familiar. A husband who gives his wife a certificate of divorce has no obligation to her.
In front of two witnesses, he hands her a piece of paper, and she's out.
She's done. So 2,000 years ago, two rabbinical schools differed in their interpretation of indecent. One held a conservative interpretation, the other one liberal. The conservative interpretation from the school of Shammai defined indecent as adultery, okay? So we're gonna make that only adultery. The liberal interpretation from the school of Hillel defined indecent as anything displeasing, such as spoiling a dish, mm-hmm. adding an exception for divorce when finding another fairer than she. I mean, that's today, right? Mm-hmm. That is today. Although that sounds flippant, it is our culture. Everywhere you look, everyone you talk to, and they'll talk about, I just want to be happy. I mean, we hear it all the time. As pastors, you just heard it all the time. And we would challenge them to think more in terms of holy, you know, rather than happy. Set aside, signified, purified. So whether conservative or liberal, the legalistic interpretation of law removes the man's obligation to his former wife when he issues her a certificate of divorce. And that's what they wanted. That's what everybody wants. I want to get out of this. I want no obligation to you.
Like it never happened.
And so you think about how that Greek culture of doing whatever you want to do, and Roman culture being a little bit more dualistic, if I'm going to do what I want to do, I'm going to hide it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then that filters in to the Jewish culture, who wanted women to be property also, but they wanted the whole purpose of this. We got to think about why do we want it? I want to remove my responsibility. I want to be right with God and everybody else by doing what I'm doing. So I'm going to find a way to justify it. Mm-hmm. It's like what W.C. Fields say when he was reading, somebody caught him reading through the Bible. He said, looking for loopholes. And that's what we do. You know, we look for loopholes. We want to justify ourselves. So outside in righteousness says that we do, what we do warrants a corresponding response from God. Get a legal divorce and remove any obligation. And that's religion, not relationship. It follows the letter of the law, but misses the spirit of the law. And Jesus fulfilled the law by clarifying its intent. Follows the letter of the law, but misses the spirit of the law. Lynn, I'm convinced that for anyone who takes his faith seriously, that is a significant issue. Sometimes we can be more difficult to be around than non-Christians because of that issue. Mm-hmm. We're going to think that God, subconsciously in our fallenness, that God's grading on the curve, that we can do that sin but not that, and we've justified this. And then in doing so, we condemn other people. And that's why Paul wrote, you who condemn others, you're doing the same thing. I know it's a sensitive topic, but Jesus' words on it, I think, are so insightful. And they can be freeing today, whether somebody's been through a divorce, thinking about getting a divorce, maybe was an innocent party in a divorce, is having an affair, is thinking about having an affair. This is so applicable. I mean, this mm-hmm. is where this is where it all connects, where it all becomes real. Your faith becomes real, where you can fully surrender, because this is going to be something probably, if you're in one of those scenarios I just described, it's going to be hard to let go. It's not going to be easy. It's mm-hmm. going to be hurt and pain, and things are going to get brought into the light a little bit that have been in darkness.
And while he's talking about divorce here, it really is not even the secondary issue. It's the third issue. What he's really talking about first is your heart, your relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I think marriage is even the thing he's talking about even ahead of divorce. Because, mm-hmm. as you said, you can't have divorce without marriage, mm-hmm. which seems really obvious. Mm-hmm. But he's really talking about marriage here as well. Mm-hmm. And as I was reading William Barclay's commentary again last night, he made this statement that the Roman Empire fell because of the breakdown of the family and the mm. ending of marriage. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty big statement to make, but he went on to explain it this way, that, well, how are these two things connected? How is the fall of this major empire connected with marriage? And he said it basically comes down to this, that marriage and family, and you know this, require morality. It requires a right and wrong. It requires telling the truth. It requires love. It requires respect, sacrifice. I mean, marriage and family really is a daily challenge and an opportunity to commit to something and to put yourself second. Well, that's the basic unit. If it doesn't happen there, then you're not going to do that with your friends. You're not going to do it with your neighbors. You're not going to do it with people that you don't know in the community. So you see how it just reaches out. So it does make sense that when marriage falls, the family falls, mm. and a nation falls. And that's very telling of us right now. Mm-hmm. In light of last week and President Obama's statements about gay marriage, mm-hmm. it's bigger than we think it is. Marriage is so much bigger and more important. And we've not treated it that way as believers. We've treated it really shabbily.
Mm-hmm. Paul wrote that family derives its name from father. It's where we get the word patriarch. And it's a picture of the community of God. And there's this idea of surrender among the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Jesus said he's humble in heart. So there's this picture of humility that has to take place in a relationship for it to last. Mm-hmm. And it's the ultimate way of saying the group is more important than the individual. And so when we want that to be different, when we want to be able to dismiss that, to walk away with no obligation, usually in my experience, that same kind of heart shows up in a business deal, shows up in friendships. It'll show up everywhere. It's a heart condition.
Mm-hmm.
The whole reason Jesus talked about inside out righteousness is because it flows from the heart. So there is this idea that I can maybe do that there, but I won't do it here. You know, I'll have duty and honor here, but over there it didn't matter. But usually that flows generally to most of the time in all areas of life. And so that's why a country would break down, because you have no endurance. You have the humility factor goes away, and the pride comes up, and life becomes about me, and a selfish mm-hmm. society begins with selfish people, right? And it's the danger that we have. I mean, it just makes sense when
it
you
does.
Think about it. But it's sad. But, you know, the first step to find restoration here is to confess. And to agree with God from his perspective that I'm seeing this differently than he sees it, than he teaches. And to recognize he designed me. And so if I'm going to experience his design for my life, I'm going to have to surrender some things here I want to hold on to mm-hmm. selfishly. And I know it's not easy. I know what we're talking about today isn't easy for anyone.
It's not. It's not at all. And I think I mentioned to you once before that I was talking to a woman that I'd met who had been married for years and was beginning a relationship with a guy that she'd met at work, and he, you know, he just made her feel warm inside. You know, she was in a marriage that had, she admitted, had not been well tended, both on her part and her husband's part. They'd kind of just sort of gotten in this, you know, this flow of life day to day, and she really felt that she wanted to take this relationship with this other guy to the next level. It was moving in that direction. It just felt so good. And I was talking to her about that. I said, I get that. I've been there before, and I can. You feel that what you have is no one else has ever had before, and I can tell you that's not true. Because anybody who's heading down the path of sin thinks that theirs is a unique situation, and it's not. It's not. But as we were talking, I said to her, you know, I told her the truth of what the Bible tells us, what God says about life and love. And I told her my own story. And I said, you know, right now your heart is just so connected to this man. You can't imagine that you could live without him. You just can't imagine that you could live without him. And I'll tell you that all of what you have is an illusion. It's the promise of something real, but it's not real. And if you truly want life, you confess this to God, he's going to turn this around, and you're going to have a wholeness that you can't imagine, that you can't imagine. I can promise you that because God promises you that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a verse in Deuteronomy that says to love God, obey him, and commit yourself to him because he is your life. And he truly, truly is. But it begins with what you've just said to us, Mitch. It begins with confession. And that then opens us to receive all that God wants to do, to purge us of that sin and to fill us with his spirit. And if you've not had that, it's hard to even imagine. If somebody else tells you they've received it from God, it's hard for you to imagine that it can be all that they tell you it is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Everybody pretends a little bit and has their best foot forward at the beginning of a relationship. And even people who have been married before, maybe lost a spouse, will maybe even sit in a pew next to somebody at church. And that relationship will start up, and they get married in a year. And then after they start having that kind of intimate relationship together, the other person's not who they thought they were. Because there was so much pretense in the beginning, and reality sets in. And some people, there's been all kinds of studies that it's usually 3 years at the max, but there's this adrenaline that releases in the brain and the newness of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And
a chemical thing.
Yeah, and a lot of the people who get married and divorced again are living off that rush. And so when that leaves, 3 years at the max, sometimes it's only two, sometimes it's less, then they're ready to get out.
And they think they've fallen out of love.
Right, and that's what they say. Yeah, I've just fallen out of love. And they're missing something better in a committed relationship is what Jesus is going to emphasize here. But it's so superficial at the end of the day. But again, in Galatians 6:1, Paul talks about when you go to somebody caught in his or her sin, the idea of being caught there is that they don't really see it. That's the context. They don't really see it. And so we're supposed to restore them gently. So I just want everybody to know I'm trying to be gentle today. And Kelly Bird does this little picture of restoring them gently when they're caught in their sin. It's kind of like I come up from a buddy behind and I grab him, you know, like under his arms in front of in his chest, and I bring his back to my chest, mm-hmm. kind of a thing. And I'm going to say, hey, buddy, I need to help you. I said it to some people, including my daughters, on other issues, that I got to be strong for you when you can't be strong for yourself. And so this is what we're going to do. Or another way I'll say it is, the best way I can support you is to support the development of Christ in you. Mm-hmm. And so here's what I'm going to say or do. So it's heavy stuff, mm-hmm. but we're getting to the spirit of the law.
I met up with this woman probably 9 months later, and she said, I just want you to know that I really hated everything you said to me, and I was really mad at you. But she said, I thought about it, and I decided that I really wanted what God might have for me. And she ended the relationship and just began to pray that the Lord would take away that emptiness she was feeling. And he did. And she made active steps toward her husband, because sometimes we want the feeling to come, and then we think, okay, then we'll stay, or then it's going to be okay. But that isn't necessarily the way that it works. She made active steps toward her husband. They talked about the things that were disappointing for both of them and what they could do differently, and began to actually connect as a husband and wife, and began to do some things together, which when you do that, you begin to have memory together, you have experiences together, and that's what a life together is. You begin to knit yourselves. And I'm just happy to report that they're well on their way to having the marriage that they wanted, mm-hmm. and that it's sort of fallen apart because they were busy sort of living separate lives, which right. happens to lots of married couples
exactly.
unintentionally.
Absolutely.
Unintentionally.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing to bring up, is that marriage or any relationship is intentional.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And even came up with one of my younger girls the other day about something about how it just happens. I said, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
It looks like that when you're watching other people, but
right.
you don't know.
No, I said, and I started talking about first steps. Started talking about the heart and then first steps. Dissatisfaction with the present state, supposed awareness of a better state, of a supposed better state, and then first steps. And that's how change happens. And so it gave me an opportunity to talk a little bit about the heart and then those first steps. And it's real simple to picture. I mean, mm-hmm. if you never saw this other person, never met this other person, didn't know about this other person, let's call them the person that maybe you want to pursue instead of your spouse, it wouldn't happen, would it? No, it's almost always a matter of convenience. It's somebody who's nearby, who's crossed your path, and it's convenient. And that's almost always the case.
Yes.
Almost always the case. Another thought go in and out. But, oh, I know. I wanted to protect the guilty here. Somebody I knew quite well was getting a divorce, and there was going to be a ripple effect on how it affected me. And I had an audience coming up with a household name. Spiritual giant type person, okay, just in my vernacular. And I wanted to ask all kinds of theological questions, but because of the connection of how this could affect me, I just felt this overall impression. If I had 30 minutes with this guy, I wanted to ask him about this situation. And he shared with me, and it ties into something you said, is why I thought about it. He shared with me a time, very vulnerable. He just met me. But he shared with me a time in his life when he was tempted to pursue somebody who wasn't his wife. And he was sick, almost just like heart sick mm-hmm. over it. And so the confession deal, he started, you know, a guy at first or a girl won't confess that to God if they're a believer. They want to hold on to it and mull it over because it becomes a safe place to live that out and play mm-hmm. that out. But as soon as you confess it, well, wait, things start to, somebody else is going to know, and or God's going to know. Well, he already knows, right? So the confession's for me. But I'm not holding on to it anymore. And he did that, and he began to pray and surrender it to God. And God didn't strike the person dead when I say this. So he removed the person from his life. Mm-hmm. And his emotions changed. And he could look back and think, what was I thinking?
Exactly.
You know, what was I thinking? And I've shared this with a lot of people before. I said, I think if you just go 30 days then maybe 60, then maybe 90. You'll not only, from stopping a relationship with somebody that's not your spouse.
You may start with 30 minutes.
Exactly, especially with texting. Yeah. I said, but here's what I think is going to happen. There's no more first steps, so you know your heart's not going to follow as much. But I think in 30, 60, 90 days, you're going to be almost repulsed that you even ventured down that road, as opposed to being heartsick and so sad that it never worked out. And that's usually been the case. It's because our heart follows our steps. I mean, we start investing there. And then the other thing is, if you got plan A and plan B, you're never going to know if plan A ever really could work, right?
Right.
And another wise friend of mine says that you'll never have an opportunity to be happier than with the person you're married with. That'll be the best option to be happy, so to speak, if that's what you want. And I think that's true. I've looked at a lot of divorce settlements. You know, people ask me my opinion or ask about the God thing and how to, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm amazed, Lynn, if you have children, how tightly yoked you are by a judge in a court until those children leave your house. It's a lot tighter than being married. You know what I mean? And because you weren't responsible, technically, somebody's going to be responsible for you. So that's, you know, we can write all the papers we want, but we're not removing the obligation, especially when children are involved. So I just, you know, if somebody's listening today, you know, and you're in that mode, you're almost headed down that road, I just would ask you to listen and just see what Jesus has to say. And maybe today's the day that you confess, that you agree to, with God from his perspective, what's going on, and he brings light and you experience restoration, and then God will use you to restore your marriage. He will use you to help restore other relationships. It's amazing.
Yes.
What can happen.
And there is that scripture in the Old Testament, and I'm sure you can give me the reference for it, that there is a sweet joy from the wife of your youth, unlike any
Proverbs.
Other. Yes, that if you're, you know, if your first spouse has passed away, or maybe you've been divorced and are married again, we wish you God's blessing on that relationship, that it is strong and lovely. But if you're in the situation now where you're thinking about leaving your spouse for somebody else, there is a love and connectedness and sweetness and pleasure about being married to the person you initially started out with that is unlike anything else. And that is a gift from God that you do even do have that. I want to go back and just mention one other thing. If you are in an emotional relationship or being tempted to go that way and that person's on your mind a lot, let me just share something that was really helpful for me and to others that I've shared this with, that when this person comes to your mind, instead of entertaining in your mind a memory that you've had with them or something you're projecting in the future, pray for that person's marriage. Nothing is going to change that faster. All of a sudden, this person no longer becomes the man or woman that you're loving, but becomes who they are, and that is somebody else's spouse. So when you think of him or you think of her, pray that God would bless their marriage, turn their hearts toward each other, and unite them as a family, and that God will do the same thing for you. That's putting it in perspective, and that will change the way that you are relating to this person and thinking about them. And God can use that to bring you back to your own marriage. It's a powerful, powerful thing because it brings the truth of really what, who all the players are and what's happening into perspective.
That's powerful. You know, in the husband of your youth thing in Proverbs, contextually, it looks like it's this, and then there's also an argument that this is what it meant. The husband of the youth would have been God. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so, and then in the verse before it, I think it makes it kind of clear contextually too. But there first has to be, this is bouncing off the pages this year as I read through the Bible. There first has to be a hardening of my heart towards God before I start taking these steps away from him as a believer. It's just the way it is. And so I have to harden my heart a little bit toward God before I start taking steps to pursue somebody that's not my who's not my spouse. My brother is a pastor at County Line Church of God and has never counseled anybody with a marriage problem who has had a prayer life, been in the Word of God, and is in community with other believers. So there's just a practical way, okay? Mm-hmm. I stop praying, I stop reading the Word, and I start to isolate myself from community. If one of those three things are happening to you, and you haven't pursued someone who's not your spouse, I'd go to those three things right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd run. Selah's new song, I Turn to You. There's something that happens inside my heart every time I hear that song. The 10th most frequently used verb in the Old Testament is shub, and it means to return to God. And it's returning to Him with all of your heart, as the Scripture says again and again and again. Not some of it, not half-heartedly, but all of your heart, including these emotions for someone else. And He will make you new. He will restore you. But at first, you know, the same thing is true. The first step to a lost and hurting world is toward God. And so the first step towards restoration is going to be toward God. And He will make our hearts new. He will show us the design He has for our lives, what's best for us because He loves us, not because it's something that's bad for us. He knows He designed us. And then we can be used to restore our relationships.
Amen. And the other thing, we were talking about marriage, and this was really helpful, and Shar had said it many, many times in the years that she was here, that marriage is a living thing. And Walt Wangwin Jr. says this in his book, As For Me in My House, that marriage, think of it as a living thing because it is. It's two living people together.
Mm-hmm.
And what does a living thing need? It needs food and it needs activity.
Mm.
And so if feeding your marriage is putting good things into it, sharing a life together, having fun together, doing all kinds of things together, and activity is the same thing. That's what it takes to make a marriage grow. And so it makes sense that it needs tending. Otherwise, it will atrophy and die.
Love and Respect is written by a professor that Kelly Bird had it in seminary.
Emerson Eggerichs.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure this was his quote. Kelly and Kevra get in the car with Susan and me, and it's like, boom, 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 the doors go shut. And, you know, and Kelly and I were talking, you know, right away about whatever, sports, whatever. Well, this time it was about this. And he said, do you know what the number one thing that happens in marriage is to keep them together? And so I had lots of ideas, obviously. And I start sharing those ideas, and he kept saying, no, 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 no. I said, well, what else is there? He goes, chit-chat. He goes, chit-chat is supposed to be the number one thing that holds marriages together. And when you think about it, it's what you just said. It's that talking together, laughing, you know, when there's like no agenda. And that you're, and really what's going on is you're just processing everything in life and enjoying life and how important that is for intimacy. And what you talked about in feeding that relationship, one of the best things you can do is the chit-chat, is to just talk about life.
Well, it's something simple, like Doug's out and we get some gas. Well, normally I would let him go by himself, but mm-hmm. once we really started thinking about, do we want to be married and what's it going to take,
mm-hmm.
I said, I'll go with you. Well, you know, that meant the world to him. That was a small thing that said, I really like you.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
You know, it's that kind of stuff. It's big things, but it's a lot of the little things.
Was it winter and did you get out and pump the gas? Only from a bald guy.
Yeah, I got a Diet Coke, but that's okay. That was secondary. That wasn't my motivation for going. Stop. 10:34. You're listening to Mid Morning. The smart aleck you just heard, that's Mitch Cruz.
Oh, come on.
Yes, he's seminary trained, but anyway, he's a real guy. Here at WBCL, we're on the air today thanks to the giving of friends like you, and a special thanks to the Millhouse Bed and Breakfast located on the banks of the Maumee River in Grand Rapids, Ohio. You can find out more about our supporters on the Ministry Partners page at WBCL.org. Let me just say, we never go off.
Oh, sorry.
We start at 10, we stay live until 11, and then somebody else live comes in.
Personal.
We're going to open the phone lines for your questions. 260-745-9090, 260-745-9090. Email is midmorninglive@wbcl.org, and Facebook is another way that you can ask questions. Our guest today is Dr. Mitch Cruz. He joins us the third Tuesday of every month. He's the author of Restoration Road. That's also his TV show. And when I say it's on around the world, that ain't hyperbole. It's true. So you can find out where and when at his website, Mitch Cruz, with a K and an R and a U and an S and an E, .com.
Okay.
Let's pick up wherever you want to pick up.
All right. I'll address that sidebar later.
Okay.
The spirit
you
of the
can
law.
Do it, you can say it on the air if it's public knowledge.
Well, my Kelsey's going to sign with Huntington's volleyball team on Friday.
That's your second oldest daughter.
And she got an email yesterday from the coach. These things don't happen. So she said, you can pick the number on your jersey. Here's your list. 1, 4, 5, 8, 16. And I said, that is simple. Man, that is simple. She goes, what? I go, 1. I go, do you know how rare an athlete ever gets one? It's usually taken or they don't hand it out. Or I said, take one. She doesn't want one.
What does she want?
I don't know.
Is it too much pressure to have number one on your back? Is that it?
It could be. I think she feels like the one line down the center of the jersey. I think she'd rather have more, you know, space covered on the jersey, kind of a deal. All kinds of girly things that I'd never really thought of. So we had that deal last night, and I kept going, nobody gets one. What are you thinking? You know, blah, blah, blah. And so I had no affection for any of these other numbers. Not one, not an ounce. So I texted her 1. That's all I texted. This morning I texted her 1, and I got a text back with the colon and the capital P, you know, that kind of thing. So she's not going to listen to me. I wonder what she's going to call in and tell us what number you would pick. Okay, sorry.
Number 1, okay.
The spirit of the law. Jesus says, but I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, or except for marital unfaithfulness, causes her to become an adulteress, and anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. We're going to say, well, what's all that? We're going to unpack mm-hmm. that. The exception of adultery is not a one-time act to be used as a loophole to exit one's marriage. Rather, it's a continual unrepentant act, one that is also superseded by forgiveness, that big idea of forgiveness. And Jesus said that Moses permitted divorce only because men's hearts were hard, noting that divorce was outside God's original design. He said that. In essence, Jesus said, be committed, which means literally stay together. Be committed, stay together. See, inside-out righteousness flows from the heart, a heart that is fully surrendered to Christ. And this is how his righteousness is applied to us. Commitment is the spirit of the law because God is committed. He tells Moses on the side of the mountain who he is. He said, I'm going to let you know who I am. And he says he maintains his love. He's committed. He will never leave or forsake us. Christ is the ultimate picture of that commitment. On the way to the cross, he said to the Father, not my will, but yours. That's not what's said in divorce marriages. In a world where there is so much desire for change in relationships, we can take heart that Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. We will remain committed to our spouses only through Christ in us. Our commitment to him is reflected in our commitment to each other. That's why we have to pull away from that commitment to him to not stay committed to our spouses. After all, God is searching through the earth, throughout the whole earth. His eyes are moving to and fro to strengthen those, to restore those whose hearts are fully committed to him. I was talking with one of my daughters a long time ago when she was little. And I must have been teaching on this at Blackhawk or something. And I said, have you ever thought about what reasons that you, if you were married, you would get a divorce? And so we just started making a list. And when we got done with the list, I said, then don't get married. And she said, why? I said, marriage is about staying married. Even if those things occur, you figure out how to humble yourself, how that person humble, and there's restoration and there's forgiveness. I said, so you don't ever want to go in with that list of why you would end a relationship. And I could see the wheel spinning, you know, but I had had a ton of people, I think, at that time come to me with their lists. And I realized that that's what we do. We go back to the legalistic interpretation of this law. We want to make a list so it removes my obligation or my responsibility. This is, when I look back on my life so far, this is one of the most unique things that have ever happened to me. A man had lost his spouse, and he and I had worked together a little bit on some nonprofit things. And I had been going through the transition of selling my business and entering seminary and figuring out what was next, and thought I was crazy. I was in the prime of my life in the auction business. People would buy and sell $1 million cars based on my advice, and it, in a lot of ways, it just did not make sense to the world. I mean, so much so that I continually would pray, wondering if I got my wires crossed. But I'd had this peace about that I was doing what I was supposed to do. So this man takes me to lunch, and he just wants to talk to me about life's transitions, because he had a very public with his wife's illness. He would take her to events, and you just saw her die at a very young age. It was sad. And he had lost her, and he was processing transitions with me. And I think, you know, maybe he was thinking about how long am I going to be president of a bank and those kinds of things. Well, a year later, on the prompting of a friend, my dad had left my mom quite some time prior, and my mom was going to be single the rest of her life. We're standing at the end of her driveway talking, mom and me. And she said, somebody called me today to ask me to dinner. And I'm saying no. And I said, well, who was it? And she told me. I said, mom, I got to tell you something. A year ago, I had lunch with him. And I left there with a thought that I've never shared with anybody. And I'm going to share it with you now. She goes, what's that? I said, I left there thinking that's one person I would take from my mom. And she, it's hard to say. And she said, oh my goodness, maybe I should call him and say yes. I said, well, you know, again, I can have my frequency off, but I just want you to know that. They dated and got married fairly soon, and he's just been great. And that, to me, is a picture of commitment. I've watched him be committed, and that was the big deal to me, because it was so obvious at that point in my life on how commitment gets tossed aside. What Jesus is saying, we just justify our actions and we toss commitment aside. So my brother and I had the privilege of doing their wedding, and I got this little illustration from a, I think it was a talk I heard a long time ago. And I used a picture of a $100 bill. And at the beginning, I let it slip out of my hands on purpose, but it looks like an accident. And then I pick it up. And then over the course of the talk, the $100 bill gets pretty beat up, and it's torn. And I ask what it was worth. Even after that, after it was beat up and torn, and everybody agreed it was $100. The value had not changed. And I said, when times are tough, when things aren't going so well, I want you to realize that the value hasn't changed. The value is still there in that other person. And because the value is determined by Christ. And he paid a world record price for each of us. So wherever you are today, I'd encourage you to see your spouse that way, that the value hasn't changed, because the value is determined by Christ. And I think you need to hear me say today, if you've been divorced, you have not committed the unforgivable sin. In Christ, God will forgive you and restore you. And if you are considering marriage, realize that you are about to make a covenant, not an agreement, not just a contract, but it's a covenant with three parties: you, your fiancé, and Christ. And it's a picture of a pyramid, and Christ is at the top. And the closer you grow to Christ individually, the closer you grow to each other. So if you're considering leaving your spouse for another person, then turn back to keep your commitment made before God. Most churches will not marry a couple where one party has left his spouse for the other, because Jesus was so clear on that issue. He talked about it again. And that's what he's talking about, divorcing someone and marrying someone else. That was so common. Mm-hmm. That was what was going on. And that relationship, like you said earlier, Lynn, is rooted in sin and it dishonors God. And that's never going to work. You need to realize if you fostered that, if you took first steps toward that, towards leaving your spouse for someone else, that that's going to be, you're going to be kicking against the goads. Those usually don't work. In fact, I was talking about it one time with someone, and I looked over my business at all the customers I had, and many had left spouses for other people. But I could only think of one or two who had still been married after, you know, a few years. And so that's just, I think, the way it is. And a lot of that is because you don't realize what kind of baggage you're bringing in. You don't realize the pretense on both sides that's been brought to the surface. The tons of responsibility, the trying to get along. You've now brought usually four people into the marriage. All of our former spouses, you got other children, you got other churches, other friends, other businesses, other careers. And it just becomes really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And most people don't have that endurance.
Last week we did a show on aging well, and Kent Keener, who's the pastoral care ministry pastor at Brookside, was with us, and we had Emily Griffin on too. And I said, what advice would you give to anybody about marriage right now, since both of you, Emily and her husband and Kent and his wife Barb, have had long-standing marriages? I think Kent's is like 59 years and Emily's was over 50 years. And Kent didn't even have to didn't hesitate. He said, be committed to your spouse. Because he said, you know, life was going to throw all kinds of things at you. But if you've already made that decision that you're going to hang in there together and you're going to think the best of each other and draw close to the Lord, which will bring you close to each other, you can be committed. Also, before we go to Roger on the phones, Mitch, I interviewed a pastor, and I'm trying to think which book it was, but he was talking about a couple in his church that before they became believers, both of them had had an affair with each other. They had divorced their spouses to marry each other. And so then they come to Christ, and here they are now attending this church, and this pastor is trying to figure out, you know, what do I do with these two people? They love the Lord a lot, but they very much are now even more aware of what they had done to their families and to each other. And so part of their ministry in this church, and it came long after they had really grown in the Lord and their own marriage, the second marriage that had grown out of an adulterous affair, had become very well established, and they were very humbled by the fact that God had forgiven them, and they are starting a new life. But they even said, do we divorce each other now and go back to our spouses? And that wasn't a decision for them to make, because their spouses had already moved on and didn't want anything to do with them. But part of their ministry in this church is to speak to people that are involved with other people, or thinking, you know, ours will be different because look how good yours is. Being very honest about the devastation that it caused in their families. And if they had known then, if they had known Christ then, how they would have done things so much more differently. But I say that to say that there isn't anything that we can do that God will not forgive. There's a period at the end of that sentence. Oftentimes there are consequences of our sin that stay with us in this life. And there's residue of heartache, and there's residue of pain. And that isn't a sign of that we've not been forgiven, but that's the result sometimes of sin.
Right.
So
yeah, the consequences are still there.
Let's head back to the phones, or head to the phones for the first time, and talk to Roger. Good morning, Roger. You're on the air with Mitch Cruz and Lynn. Do you have a question or a comment, Roger?
Good morning, Mitch.
Hi.
This is Roger Brackeen.
Hi, Roger.
I just wanted to know if you got the idea for the name of your program, Around the World, from that song, Around the World, There Will Be Dancing in the Streets.
No, I didn't.
So then you tell us how you got the idea, Mitch. Roger, I'm going to take you off.
How did you get the idea?
I'm going to take you off so you can listen on your radio, Roger. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi.
The Restoration Road.
Yeah.
I don't know when I got it. I remember thinking about how God restores us continually, and how that was related to a car, and then how it's a journey, how sometimes it's two steps forward, one step back because of us, and that was a road. And I think that's how it came about. That's a good question. A really good question. Do you want to talk about being falsehood free?
Let me ask you a question that's come in from one of our listeners via email this morning, Mitch, and then we'll move to that. And I'm reading this cold. She writes, I had an affair during my marriage. My husband found out, and we separated for 1 year. In the past 4 years, I've surrendered my life to Christ and cleaned up my life. Mm. My husband and I are working on our marriage. There are times when my husband will still accuse me of having an affair. I find myself still wanting to be secret in my life. Mm. I struggle with being honest and open to my husband and to people in general. I struggle with wanting to hide and run away from the truth. Mm-hmm. I'm attending Bible study, and I pray and seek God daily in my life, but when things get rough, I always want to run.
It's a trust issue. There's an insecurity deep inside each one of us, and it affects trust. And we were designed only to be secure in Christ and the truth. When we want to be secure, we want something that's true all the time. Well, there's only one entity who is, and it's a person, and it's God and Christ. And so I would run to God. I would run to Him when I feel these insecurities, and I would do that through, again, the Word of God, the people of God, the Spirit of God, as opposed to keeping safe places that are just for me to dwell in that insecurity. I would move to God, run to God, and I would confess those. And I would probably keep a journal and write things that are going on inside my heart, why I want to run, why I feel this way. And you're going to find yourself that you're going to be writing Psalms, so to speak. I mean, it's what David did. He poured out his heart to God, and then he would say, you know, I feel this way. God, do this to my enemies. And then he would come back at the conclusion, I think, of all but one psalm and say, you know, but God, I trust you. I'm in this with you. And I'm paraphrasing. So I think that's where we need to be. We need to have an intimate relationship with God where we're pouring out our hearts to Him. Now, I would also put flesh on that with a same gender confidant, maybe somebody down the road a little further spiritually, where you can pour out those things as well. And trust has been broken. So trust is built back over time, and it happens through verification. So to a certain extent, you know, if you want to have intimacy with your former husband or eventually current husband, you'd want to have verification and probably an openness about your texts, about your emails, and allow him to see those. I know several people with healthy marriages that, you know, it's just not an issue. Mm-hmm. You can look at it anytime you want. And so, you know, I think somebody's going to think twice on what they put in writing or in print when they know somebody else is looking, but that's putting flesh on God, so to speak, because we know God's always looking, but we can work our way around that. Do you think that addresses that?
It does, and I was thinking, too, the comment from our friend here who says, my husband still accuses me of having an affair. I would ask him, friend, why he's doubting you. Is he trying to punish you, or is he sincerely afraid, really wondering if you're having an affair? Hmm. And if he's still punishing you,
that's a great discernment.
It probably means that he hasn't forgiven you. Mm-hmm. And that's really important if you're going to have a new marriage together. So that's a question to ask him. And if he's truly doubting because he's afraid and he's seeing signs or thinking he's seeing signs, ask him what they are and then what you can do to help alleviate the fear that he's feeling that you may be doing that. So that's a question to ask. And then you were saying that you're afraid of really others finding out or not wanting people to know this about you. I just want to remind you that's not who you are. You are not the woman with the A on her chest. You've been forgiven by God, and He sees you as His beloved daughter. And any condemnation that you're feeling is not coming from Christ. That is not what He is saying to you. You are forgiven, and you are right in God's sight through Christ. Paul tells us that in Colossians, and he tells us to remind ourselves of that, to go back to that truth, because that's the reality, even if you're not feeling that. So that's the real reality above what you're sensing. So Romans, is it 8:1 that says we're no longer, where there's no condemnation to those who are in Christ Jesus? Mm-hmm. And that's you, my friend. So memorize that verse, and when that lie comes back to you, you counter that with the truth of who you are.
Yeah.
And you talked about being isolated. Mitch, I don't know, even though she's in Bible study, if she has at least one good friend that she can be very honest with.
Right. Yeah, probably won't happen in a group. The other thing is she probably can't be the deliverer or the messenger, the deliverer of this message. But Proverbs, for her husband, Proverbs 17:9 says, whoever would foster love covers over an offense, but whoever repeats the matter separates close friends. And there are other verses in Proverbs that talks about it's not going to work if you keep bringing up an offense. Mm-hmm. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 13 that love doesn't keep score, so to speak. You don't keep a record of wrongs. And so I think that as trust is rebuilt, mm-hmm. He won't do that as much. The greatest I like this illustration. The greatest way to keep weeds out of your lawn is to have a healthy lawn. And that's the same thing in the marriage. The more you focus on the health of the marriage, the more the weeds will take care of themselves.
Let's go back to the phones and take one more caller, and then Mitch will try to get through falsehood as much as we can.
Okay.
Line 1 wishes to remain anonymous. Line 1, you're on the air with Mitch and Lynn. What's your question?
Well, I haven't been able to hear the entire broadcast today, but I was wondering, when you were saying that adultery was the only thing, what about desertion? My father and my husband both deserted us, never to be seen or heard from again. So what does a woman do then?
With regard to divorce.
Abandonment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just taking what Jesus said there in those verses. Abandonment is an issue. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're abandoned, you're free to get remarried. There's three A words that believers and pastors will often use as loopholes. And I'm really careful to tell people that they can get divorced for these three things, because I think forgiveness supersedes all of them. Those three words will be adultery, abandonment, and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets sometimes abandonment. Let me say this often. Abandonment and abuse get leveraged for somebody who wants out, the offended party. And if you're abused, you should not be there and get physically abused. You should find protection. But we have, I've just heard again and again, people who would want to take emotional abuse or emotional abandonment and say, okay, there, I'm out. You know, I there's my loophole. And that's the boss theme of what Jesus is teaching here, is that we want to look on how to be committed. We don't want to look for the loophole to get out. So you can be forgiven. I didn't mean to indicate that adultery was like an only loophole, but it's not a loophole. We still work to forgive. Christ in us forgives. We still work towards restoration.
And the word loophole, indicates or maybe sort of acts as an excuse, mm-hmm. as opposed to a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And in this context where Jesus is speaking to people, they were looking for loopholes, and that's how he's even describing it for
them.
As opposed to the legitimate reason. All right, so thank you so much for your call. Mitch, we've got about a minute and a half left. We may need to pick up with this one next time, and so we can really give it due justice, but whatever you want to do with it in the last minute and a half, go right ahead.
Well, I remember when I was about 5 or 6 years old, and I had my Hot Wheels set. And I would play with those in the hallway, but if I would go into the bathroom, it had a tile floor, a linoleum floor, instead of carpet, so they would roll much better. So I remember rolling them down the kind of narrow, long bathroom floor, and they kind of made their ways to where the toilet was. And around the toilet was like this little bubble in the linoleum. It was this kind of little square, and I thought, that shouldn't be there. And I lifted up on it, and I created a hole. Well, my mom, who is a perfectionist, noticed that hole, I think, later that day. And she asked me who did it. And she even suggested one of my uncles, I think, who had been there that week. And I said, yes, he, I'm sure he did it. And that was my first lie that I can recall. And it was the first time that I could recognize that my walk didn't match my talk. And that's what happens when we lie. And that haunted me until I confessed it to my mom 35 years later. And next time when we're together, we're going to talk about Jesus' antidote to lies. And it's interesting how divorce and lies tend to go together. And so Jesus will come back to the spirit of the law that can free us.
Thank you, Mitch Cruz, for joining us for today's Mid-Morning. Mitch is with us the third Tuesday of every month. To find out more about him, his television ministry, his book Restoration Road, go to his website, mitchcruz.com. Thanks for listening today. And just a reminder that today's show is up on our archive later on today. The worksheet for today's show is also on the Mid-Morning, accessed via the Mid-Morning homepage. Go to WBCL.org, click on Programs, and then Mid-Morning. Ross McCampbell is up next on Family Friendly and Commercial Free. WBCL.